Welcome to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram with Dr. David Daniels, the program that will develop your own self-awareness and strengthen relationships with all of those around you. Now, enlightening you with the Enneagram, here's Dr. David Daniels.
Well, welcome back to Voice America and to Bringing the Enneagram to Life. I'm your host, David Daniels, and this afternoon we have with us our twos, our givers on the Enneagram, who I'll be introducing in just a minute, but I want to refresh your memories, those of you who are new to the program, that the Enneagram means a nine-sided figure. Ennea is Greek for nine, simply. And I like to remind people sometimes that if the Pentagon had had nine sides, everybody in the world, around here anyway, would know what an Enneagram or an Enneagon was, because it would be in the forefront of their memories. And the Enneagram is a personality typology. It's a personality styles typology that tells about nine very fundamental ways that we relate in the world in terms of our feelings, in terms of our behavior, in terms of our thinking. And it's important and vital way of understanding ourselves, because it gets right down to basic motivation, what's driving us, what's the core structure of our particular coping strategy or style. And it gets to the way we organize attention in the world, which is very selective. We don't realize that at first, but I want to remind you that it's very selective. And when we can get self-observant and be aware of where our attention's going, we have a great tool for being able to be more masterful in our lives, for being able to alter the way our attention goes, and hence our energy and our behavior. Now, this afternoon, we're going to be having the type 2 on the Enneagram. It's one of the heart types. Now, remember the three centers of intelligence. There's a mental center of intelligence, very important. We're mostly all familiar with it because that's what we get in our schooling, mostly. But there's a heart center of intelligence, or a connection center. It tells us about how we relate to people, about the feelings we have, about the image that we want to portray. It's a vital intelligence that is there omnipresently. It's in our nonverbal behavior and in our communication patterns. And then, just to complete this, there's the third center of intelligence, that's the body or instinctual center of intelligence, the kinesthetic center of intelligence, that tells us a lot about power and control and how we stand in the world and whether or not it's comfortable. But right now we're in this next of the heart-centered types, and it's type 2, the giver or helper. And we have with us today Ron, Eileen, and Deb. And I want to thank you for being here. Now, the structure for two is that in the nascent beginning, that there's a freedom that the little infant has. And, of course, there's a freedom in the essential state, knowing that a greater will provides for us, that needs are met not through our own agency, but through ultimately the agency of the universe, if you will. But this child experiences that's not the deal, that in order to be loved and approved, you've got to become a little giver. This world is a give-to-get sort of deal. So you believe that to earn love and approval and to have value and esteem in this world and ultimately also security, you have to focus yourself on the wants, wishes, needs, desires of others. And you have an energy that drives us. It's called pride, but it's kind of a active energy that goes out to meet and fulfill the needs of other people, naturally. And it's like you know better what they need than they know themselves. In the process, attention naturally gets organized toward other people and their wants, wishes, needs, and desires. It focuses actively out there, and your own needs can go way into the background and be quite unfulfilled, and you're quite unaware of this. There's a phenomenon called repression, that it's like your own needs tend to disappear. Of course, you have them, and they have to come out some way. We'll explore this. But that's the whole structure of this type, and the thing you don't want to have happen, like the worst thing that could happen, is that you'd be somehow useless and dispensable, because your whole esteem, your whole structure is based upon that. And if you were useless and dispensable, it would be just the opposite of being indispensable and needed by other people. So if I could turn to you all now and just say, what does this bring up to you in terms of the themes of the type, of your type two? Deb?
I think that for me the driving force in my giving has been shame. For me it feels like shame and pride are two opposite sides of the same coin, and I was most aware of shame through my life because I didn't believe that people could love me for who I was, so I had to do things in order to get their attention focused on me, and they would give me something back. And that has been the driving force most of my life. So that's how it shows up for me.
You know, often twos also speak about the sense of, you know, it's very easy to puncture a little sense of pride, and it kind of slips right away into shame or some kind of sense of humiliation or belittlement that I'm like nothing.
Yeah, and I think that must have been happening a lot through my perception, because mostly I'm aware of the shame. So there must have been thousands of little things a day that I picked up that felt like they were, it was poking at my pride, and I went right into shame and was there most of the time.
So the structure tries to keep you away from that, and it's kind of its energy is driving along with the pride.
Right. Yes. So I'm going to be good enough and giving enough that people won't notice all those things that I feel shame about. Right. They'll only notice the giving.
So in this process, what happens to your own needs?
I don't have any. I don't have any. And I literally...
Well, I'm going like, well, you're sitting here today. I mean, something must have got fulfilled.
It did get changed. It got changed. But I certainly have the ability when I'm with other people to have, if I have a headache, it will recede. I will not be aware of it. In fact, I'll even in the midst of it think, well, my headache's gone. It just recedes, and I don't feel that until later. If I'm alone, then I start feeling it again.
Right. So much attention is going out to the people that are around you and that you're with and that are important in your life.
Right.
Right. Eileen, how about yourself?
For me, I think it was just an ability or a sensing of knowing what their needs were, and it was just so easy for me to interpret those and to give them those. It was a way of being in the world.
Right, and in the process, what about your own needs?
To get my own needs met, I tended to manipulate the situation to bring it around to where, to get those needs met, to set it up so that I could come into the forefront, but it was hard for me to ask.
So what do you mean by manipulate to get? Would you give an example?
I can't think of anything right now specifically, but I know that a lot of times it wasn't unconditionally. It was, well, if I do this for them, they'll know that I'm giving it, and they'll appreciate my giving, and then they'll give back to me.
So if you give and give and give enough, and you know, and then maybe some subtle clues about feeling disappointed.
That's right.
Right. It would be an emotional, because it's an emotional type. It would be like, yeah, you're not giving back to me.
Yeah. And so then I try harder. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm... Just try harder and they'll see.
Right, right. Does it ever get to feel kind of desperate?
Yes, it certainly did. You know, there were times when, you know, I would have such an expectation on being given back to, and when that didn't come through, it just rocked me.
Mm-hmm.
It just rocked my world.
Right. Good. Thank you. And Ron, how about yourself? The basic themes here.
Well, I think the role I played in the family I grew up in was one of helper or giver, and it just seemed like a very natural role for me. It seemed like something I was good at. I seemed to have this natural radar for picking up on people's needs and being able to give to them. And then I felt like I got, for the most part, got recognized for that in my family as somebody who was good at doing that.
Mm-hmm. What in your family situation, you know, led you that way rather than someone else?
You mean what was going on in the family?
Yeah, uh-huh.
So my mom had some emotional difficulties, and even though I had an older brother and sister, they seemed to just, you know, kind of ignore that and go out and play, and I seemed to stay in the house and make sure that she was okay, and actually, you know, got into, you know, really kind of propping her up and giving her positive strokes to try to help her from falling into some kind of emotional problems or depression.
You know, you bring up the theme of, well, what's the origin of all of this? And you had brothers and sisters, but they didn't do that.
Yeah.
But so there may very well be, as there are in all of us, at least some genetic components. We come into the world sort of with a way of leaning toward, you know, making other people happy or pleasing them or serving them in some way. And then you find out that there's actually an environment calls for that.
Yeah, I really got curious about that at one point in my life. As an adult, I went to my brother, who was identified as a type 7, and I asked him, I said, you know, when Mom was having all those problems when we were children, didn't that concern you? And he said, no, that was her problem. That was her stuff, not mine. And I was quite taken back that he could be detached from that kind of situation where I couldn't be that detached.
Right. We've already had a program on the sevens, but just as a reminder, the seven is the epicure, and the epicure's whole strategy is like, I've got to keep life up and going, and I got a reference to myself to do that. And so, Mom, that's somebody else's, but the two, the giver, you know, tends to reference outside themselves to the people in their lives, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, how about in your instance? Was there a...
My parents never really got along that well, and there were lots of silences, and I was very uncomfortable with the withdrawal, the silences, and so my job, as I saw it, was to ease things and to be a support for my mother as well, and to help her through this emotional situation. And so I was the mediator in the marriage, and I guess I had the impression that I could somehow solve their problems. I could make them go away.
Right, and you'd go out there and some actively intervene.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Which is one of the key differentiations between a type we haven't yet gotten to, the nine or mediator. They kind of wait, the mediators wait till they get called, and the giver goes out there and sees it and goes out there actively. Right. How about your situation, Deb? I mean, growing up.
Well, in my case, my parents were there. They were loving. But they were both very focused on the task of providing safety, security, shelter. And my emotional needs weren't getting met. My dad was in the military, and we moved around a lot. And so I was constantly losing that sort of foundation of people outside the family who cared about me and was very really felt the loss tremendously each time I had to lose those friends and the familiarity of the surroundings of my surroundings and go someplace new and not know what was going to happen or who I was going to be with. It was, I think that's more what got me into the mode of looking to be a giver and sort of somewhat of a protector in my family. I was the oldest child and the only girl. So I took on that role, and I got a lot of good strokes from my parents for being good and helpful and for not causing trouble. So I only had to hear that one time, I think, in order to really know that was it for me. That's what I needed to do in order to get what little I could get from them emotionally. It got me enough that to just kind of get me by.
I wonder, with all of you, with so much attention and energy going out to fulfilling others, what the cost of this has been in your own lives, your own well-being? What's the cost been, especially before you did any personal work? Deb?
Well, I think for myself, it greatly affected what my expectations were and what I got in terms of being in a long-term relationship. I was very much a martyr in that relationship because I would give and give and give, wanted something back, didn't often get it, and I became more and more resentful. And would try harder, would sort of redouble my efforts to give and give and give, and then I would fall flat again. And I did that pattern over and over again for years and years and years. And when I began to come into my healing and focus more on myself. My family was quite taken aback, and particularly my partner. That's not how I had trained him to see me as someone who took care of herself, but rather as someone who took care of everyone else first.
Right. It's not like he signed up for that.
He didn't sign up for that, and he wasn't a happy camper.
Mm-hmm. Right. And Eileen, what's been the cost side?
Well, the cost is that, excuse me, you never take the time to look after your own needs, to spend time on your own personal development, to see what you're thinking and feeling. It's always this outflowing of energy going out to other people. And in my personal relationship, I now look at it, and I know I did that with such an intensity of wanting. I had an idea of what I want this relationship to be like, and he's a 9, and you know, looking at it now, I think, you know, that was intense for him. That was that must have been hard.
That you were too intense.
That I was too intense. You know, I was giving and giving because I had this idea of how I wanted it to be, and until you get to the part where you need to grow spiritually, it seems like you have no skills and tools to get this.
While we haven't yet either done the 9 or mediator style, it's a kind of go along and get along style. Mm-hmm. And if you're not making any claims on me, or very few, and the rest of the environment is, I'm not going to do it as much. So you might just keep giving, 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 and he doesn't know, you haven't said, you know, I need X.
I used to say it was like he was behind a pane of glass, and I could see him, but I couldn't get to him. Mm-hmm. I wasn't getting any feedback, any sort of... no, don't do that, that's too intense, or what I need is. There wasn't that feedback, so it was just this constant energy that was focused in this area.
Right. Do you know, it brings up, it's a great example, brings up that there's three ways that needs can go. The first way is, I can serve other people's needs, which is very vital and important. And I can serve my own. The second is, I can serve my own needs pretty well. But the third, and this is usually the hardest for the two, is like receiving from others. You know, really asking and receiving from others. So, unwittingly, you may have been part of the glass wall.
Absolutely.
How is it with receiving? Just
hard.
Hard.
It's hard. It's that pride thing, that independence, that I can look after myself. I can take care of everything for me and everybody else, too. And so when it's given to me, I struggle with that.
Right. Thank you. And Ron, what I think is the cost?
For me, the cost, well, early on, of course, the childhood in being there for my mother was to, you know, in some ways kind of to lose my childhood. And then later on in life, it felt like I had filled myself up with other people and that I wasn't whole with myself, but that, you know, I felt sort of a, you know, some type of wholeness, not a healthy wholeness, with these other people that I'd filled myself up with. And when they kind of went out of my life at times, you know, I could feel this sense of emptiness or this void.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you've mentioned this indirectly, but I'd like to hear that in vital relationships especially, but in general, what are the gifts that you bring to the world? What are the strengths of your type?
Well, I think for myself...
This is Deb.
Thanks. I think I'm able to listen really well, and my needs at that time can recede, so I'm really present with the other person. I have a lot of energy, particularly in situations that are critical, to really focus on the other and move and do exactly what needs to be done in a given moment and keep my head, because again my needs recede. I'm very loving and generous with people, and particularly when I can receive back, I can continue that going. Now I know that. Before I was going to be loving and generous no matter what.
Right. It's a very interesting phenomenon that twos inadvertently deprive others of giving. So it's very hard to give to you. And it's very rewarding to the most of us out here, actually, to have somebody over there to receive. And because there's this kind of natural tendency in all of us to want to be of service.
Yeah, and you know, I couldn't receive until I believed I was worthy of that, that I was, that people could love me for who I was, not for what I did for them. And until I could get to that place, I just didn't, I would just not allow people to give to me because I didn't think I deserved it.
Now, how would, what's the challenging side then of being in a relationship with the two?
I think we can be overwhelming. We can be real needy and sort of clingy. I hate to say that; it sounds horrible, but it's the truth. And I think that we can give to the other person, but it's difficult to allow them to give back. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's a gift to be able to give to someone, but it goes in the reverse. And so I think it's a challenge when people love us and they want to help us or be kind to us or support us, we have a difficult time letting that in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you. So Eileen, with you, what are the real strengths and blessings of being in relationship with you?
I think that I'm very easy to talk to, and for people who have difficulty expressing their feelings, intuitively I can feel what they're feeling and they somehow sense that, so it's easier for them. I also find I'm not judgmental. Whatever their feelings or whatever it is, wherever they're at, I'm fine with that.
Right, you can alter to meet needs and be a little different here and a little different there, depending upon.
I know what's going to make them feel more at ease, and what might not. So I'm very conscious of that. Mm-hmm.
And what's likely to happen if I ask you, well, what do you need?
Might take a bit of time.
Takes a bit of time. Tell me a little more about that. This is part of the challenge.
Yeah, it is. I might not be able to come up with it real clearly right away. It may take me a little while to think about it.
Because the whole structure of the personality is so much around oriented and all the energy. You've got a vast reservoir of what other people need. But there hasn't been much attention. And so at first, when you come back inside, it's, my God, what is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what might be challenging in addition in being in relationship with the two, with you?
Challenging? My attention goes out to a lot of other people. And that takes energy away from the primary relationship. I'm very receptive to other people's needs. So sometimes just a phone call can take me away quite easily.
And so, of course, this you're married to this mediator, 9, and he's not going to be making a lot of claims on you.
Right.
So other people are making claims, and there you can nurture them, and that can bolster your own self-esteem.
That's right. So I do have a wide range of friends and activities that I do, and that can be a drawback.
Mm-hmm. So the challenge is around, you know, you're expressing your needs and in a sense the partner coming forward and saying, now I really want to know what you need and what you desire.
I don't have as much difficulty with expressing my needs as I've heard some of the other twos. What is very difficult for me is if I have expressed them and then the other person has not acted on those, then it's very wounding for me.
Right. So what makes it wounding?
I guess I just don't get how they can't give.
Right. It seems so natural, like, you know, like, can't you get
it? Like, why wouldn't you?
Right. So it's like, this is the whole deal, that their attentional stance may miss this altogether. Or not altogether, but it's their way of giving can be so much different that you don't even see it as giving.
That's right.
You experience it that way. So, Ron, what about the gifts of being in relationship with you and the challenges, too?
Well, I think the gift is being able to put my own needs on the back burner. And, you know, that might not sound great, but if you're a parent or, you know, you have a family member or loved one that's ill, to be able to, you know, put your own needs on the back burner and be there for them, you know, I think is really kind of a wonderful thing, actually. And, you know, I sometimes take kind of pride in that, actually, that if I see somebody else, who a parent who's not able to be there for their child in a certain way, I'll think, you know, how can they not put their needs on the back burner and be there for this, for their own child?
Mm-hmm. And the challenging side?
Well, the challenge is that, you know, that if you really aren't in touch with your own wants and needs in a very significant way, or even that you don't even know yourself to a great extent, that, you know, you're not showing up as a truly whole person. And I think we get in relationship with someone. In healthy relationships, we want to be in a relationship with somebody who's more whole.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you. So I want to just inquire to you, what'll get you into personal reactivity, what we call, what will set you off or push your buttons? It's different things for different types. Of course, all of us can get our buttons pushed, so to speak. But what will get you upset, get you hysterical or angry or whatever form it takes? Deb?
I think for myself, one of the things I recognize that still goes on in my life is when I get overwhelmed. Because since I give so much, I take on too much a lot of times. And then thinking I can handle all of it, I'll be fine, I don't have any needs anyway, so who cares? And then I reach a wall, and I've got too much going on, and I can't get to the things that I think are important or the people, and I get completely overwhelmed, and I'm stressed. I feel weak. Sometimes I feel like I'm not getting enough help. If I got more help, I can be blaming when I'm like that. I can be kind of a martyr and feeling like, you know, I work so hard, and where's everybody else? And it's really about me not having boundaries about taking things
right.
on.
I give and I give, and
I
it gets kind of the emotion
give,
can come
what
up.
Do I get back? Nothing. Yeah.
Kind of get both a combination of sort of anger and strong other feeling.
Yeah. And then I'm sort of a mess until I finally get that I just am trying to do too many things. And mm-hmm. and I lose my awareness about that, and I'll do it again. And then become aware again, okay, yeah, this was too much, and I took on too much, and I'll set the boundaries, and then they creep up on me again.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you. And for yourself, Eileen, what'll set you off?
I think work is when I focus on work, I can work endless hours without even bringing my head up. And that sometimes creates a panic in me because it's always, if I can get it done, then I'll have time for myself. But when I do have time for myself, it seems like relationships or people come in, and then I'm off doing for them and the stimulus of that. And the downside is that I don't block enough time for myself. Mm-hmm. I don't set the boundaries, although I am getting really better at being more comfortable by myself and taking the time to be by myself.
So this can just keep rising up, so to speak, and then I may come along with some little old request, and it's just like the dam breaks at that point.
Yeah.
Is that true? I mean, something like that?
Well, sometimes it's like, oh, no, I don't want to deal with this now, and yet I still do. I am getting better at saying, look, can I get back to you on that, setting more boundaries? But, yeah, that was the way it was.
That's
it was
the
like,
way
here's
it
another
used to
thing.
Be. Right.
I'm still, now this is really not going to give me any time.
Right. But from my perspective at that moment, I mean, like, well, why aren't you giving to me all of a sudden, you know?
It's usually the primary relationship.
Uh-huh, right. Thank you. And yourself, Ron, I mean, all of these, as you can see, you know, kind of tie back to the basic proposition. You give and you give and you give, but you want to be given back to, and it gets upsetting. Like when you get exhausted, it's like, where am I? Who am I? You know, what's my worth going to be if I can't just keep giving?
I think for me, the two things that will upset me, and they'll especially upset me if I'm not taking good care of myself, and that's people who take me for granted, and then also people who I consider selfish or self-centered. But people who take me for granted, maybe I've given to them in a certain way, and then all of a sudden now they sort of start expecting it on a regular basis. And you know, don't thank me for it, or don't, you know, they just sort of keep assuming that I'm going to keep giving to them in a certain way. And I think that just really dings my pride around wanting to be acknowledged for my giving and for, you know, feeling important in a person's life.
Right. You know, I love it. I used to think of this as the example. You've taken me out for ice cream 9 times in a row. What do you expect, you know, when the 10th time comes? You know, it's sort of like we all get fixed into expectations of each other, and then if you don't take me out for ice cream the 10th time or whatever it is, it's like, what's the matter with you? Mm-hmm. So it's the way we program each other. Yes, Eileen.
I was just thinking about something that for me it was, I'm willing to give, and then when it comes Christmas or birthdays, I had an expectation like, okay, this is my time to receive. Make sure you... This is my time, and if my birthday would be forgotten, it was like monumental. And my partner birthdays weren't a big deal for him, so he never understood that part of it. Like, well, why are you so upset?
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like this is your path of development, is make yourself a big deal, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
You know, one little thing just in terms of the interaction that we didn't cover, I don't know if it's really little, but you can be so active and so giving, and you can see, you know, I mean, actually it feels to me as a 6, sometimes you see needs that aren't even there, and it can feel intrusive. Mm-hmm. Like maybe if I'm just being quiet, you think I must need something. And you come in your own loving way, but it seems intrusive. Has that ever been part of feedback you've gotten?
When I, about 6 or 7 years ago, I was going through a divorce, and it was a very difficult time for my son, for all of us, but particularly for my son who was away from home. And I wanted to help him with it, and I felt responsible because it was my choice. And so I was calling him all the time, and I'm sure that I was intrusive, and he just needed some time to deal with it in his own way, and certainly would have called me, but I was feeling shame and guilt, and so I just kept calling him and calling him, and looking back at the time, I thought it was necessary, mm-hmm. but I think I was quite intrusive in trying to hurry up his process of upset and possibly, you know, anger at me, whatever was going on with him, and.
Right, and even in some way, meeting a need inside yourself, like assuaging the right. shame that you felt somehow for all of this.
Right, and the need in me was that we were very close, and when the divorce came, that put some distance between us that I found very, very difficult mm-hmm. to tolerate initially, mm-hmm. and eventually I got that I was. In trying to hurry his process along, and I backed off, and he came around that he would, but I couldn't quite trust that he loved who I was.
Right, you know, it's interesting because you didn't call him to say, I need to talk to you.
No.
You know, I need a little nourishment here.
No,
I just need the contact of your verse. I just need to hear your voice. It's like, are you all right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I have 2 sons that are... The oldest is a 4, and the second one is a 6. And so my 4 son took a lot of my attention. And in looking back, I felt quite guilty that I hadn't given my other son the attention that I'd given the first one. And so I sent him an email one day, and I was apologizing to him, saying, you know, I'm so sorry. I can see now where you really needed attention, and you didn't get it, and he sent me an email back, and he said, well, Mom, for the record, he said, I really didn't want you in there. He said, I was quite happy where I was. Mm-hmm. And that was quite a revelation mm-hmm. for me to realize that 6s don't always need a
right, life. And he was, from his point of view, he's getting plenty of attention.
And, whenever he asked for something, I was just on it. If he asked, mm-hmm. he got it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even when you're parenting your children, this certainly gives you an insight into understanding that they don't all need the same things.
Right.
They have different wants and
right.
needs.
Thank you. I want to turn now to how has the Enneagram benefited your life, or what does the Enneagram mean to you? Say, Ron?
Well, the Enneagram's been such a powerful tool in my life. I've been studying it now for about 15 years, And it truly is a, instead of just a tool, it's truly a practice for me, something I feel like I practice every day. And I feel like the system is so specific. I've studied a lot of different systems, and but the Enneagram seems so specific in identifying personality and identifying characteristics and then ways to grow that I think it's quite amazing and quite the gift in that area.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in terms of your own very personal development, what's been the major awakening or awareness?
Well, certainly along the lines of what we've been talking about, trying to come back inside myself more so, to fill myself up with myself, to really know my wants and needs more so, to be able to spend some time alone, to be able to self-observe better, also processing my feelings better. Mm-hmm. To be in relationship in a healthier sort of way.
Right. You know, and it's said that the goal is to come back to not humiliation or shame, but to come back to a sense of humility, meaning being in the presence of the grace of the natural flow of giving and receiving that's just there in the universe, so to speak, and then more specifically in relationship, the natural flow of receiving and giving just as it takes place, which is the beauty of a good relationship and beauty and love. So thank you. How about Eileen?
Actually, I just discovered the Enneagram 4 weeks ago, and I have done a lot of studying and looking for things and looked at other personalities as well. This is just, it's just simplified things and put some answers to a lot of reasons why there was maybe conflict in different relationships or... It's just amazing. It identifies your the good, the bad, and the ugly. And when you can identify the goodness of who you are and look at, you know, what you need to work on, you really can transcend as a person to be better.
I think what you say is really important too. We need to identify the goodness. We need to be forgiving toward ourselves and self-accepting in order to really bring about the change and to look at, oh, my God, I've been over-giving. I've done too much. I haven't, you know, cared enough about myself. I haven't been on the receiving end. You know, it's hard for all of us, regardless of our type, to kind of, you know, when we wake up to go, oh, my goodness, so this is what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Deb, what about you?
I'm a counselor. And I've done a lot of my own personal work because I have felt like if I'm going to ask other people to do it, I need to do my own. And in doing that, I was never quite able to understand why I was, you know, 6 inches off the ground, really upset about something, and someone else was calm and could take it in. And I could just never quite get how to... heal some of the things inside of me. And I began, when I started into the Enneagram about 4 or 5 years ago, I wasn't able to take it all in at once. I wasn't able to take in that I had false pride, that I murder, that I had these traits within me that I certainly used, that I was manipulative. Initially, it was very shameful for me to admit those things to myself. So the Enneagram allowed me to take those things in and look at them as I was able. So not only is it a really clear process that helps me understand more about my thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, but it's also a way for me to begin to heal slowly at my own pace. And it's a very gentle process that because of the way it's presented and because of the way that I'm able to and that the group is able to support each other, then I'm able to move into a healing place and not be so afraid of shame and those other things that come up when I'm trying to change something.
Right. Thank you. It is a very affirming process. Oh, yes, Ron.
I'll say one more thing about that, David, is that I think for me, the Enneagram, if you are a 2 or as a 2 with pride, it seems to put you in a one-up, one-down position with people.
Right.
And I think with the Enneagram, for me personally, it's kind of equalized the playing field, that I understand that I'm a type that's no better than any other type, and that we all have issues, and that we all can be supportive of one another and accepting of one another. So for me, it's truly erases this sort of one-up, one-down position.
Right, and it leads right into my last question, which is, what can the rest of us do to support your development? And I'd like to hear from you. I mean, I know it has something to do with, you know, asking you, and sometimes repeatedly, you know, like, what is it that's important to you? What do you really need? You know, what do you want? And then waiting a little bit because you may not know right away. But could you all speak to that briefly? Deb?
I think for myself, particularly in a relationship that I'm currently in, it's recognizing that I really need the person to keep asking. Not forever and ever, not, you know, but to give me some time and then ask again. And if I'm still looking a little funky, ask me again. that I can get to it, but like Eileen said, you know, I need some time to understand what is going on with me. And I know I don't want to be reactive in my old ways. So I take a deep breath and I go inside, and it takes me a while to find what the real issue is beyond the hysteria and the hurt and the shame and all that stuff. And so people can support me by noticing and asking that things go on with me too. And even though I haven't reinforced that a lot.
Thank you. Eileen?
I was listening to Deb and sitting here thinking, how do I do that? I guess it's like anything else. You just need practice in doing it. And I'm getting better at being clearer myself. I use the words I want or I need or I feel. And that helps me get in touch with what it is I want or need
right,
or feel.
That's what you do, but what can we do?
What can you do? Oh.
Notice how that goes off the screen.
Just keep asking, I guess, and make sure that we do finally come up with something.
Thank you. Thank you. It's hard, isn't it? And Ron, and then we're going to have questions from our audience.
I think for me, I was in a relationship with a type 6 who was quite skeptical of my giving. And we had a talk early on in the relationship where she said to me, you know, all this giving is really nice, but I'd really prefer that you show up in the relationship. And at first I was quite taken back by that, like, well, that's a novel idea. But it was actually very, very helpful that we took that approach to the relationship, where it wasn't just me and my giving primarily showing up in the relationship, where I was challenged to actually show up in the relationship.
You know, you even bring it up, it's not just, you know, asking you what you need, but wanting, you know, what do you think, feel, what's of interest, you know, what's going on with you, all of the above. So can I turn to the audience, and what questions do we have?
Just want to thank Dr. Daniels and the panel for your honesty and sincerity. The question I have is...
This is Tony, right?
Yes, this is Tony. For a two as a parent, what are some of the cues, or what are some of the areas of awareness that you've had to kind of be open to? Because so much of parenthood is about providing, is about serving, is about meeting needs. So as a parent, what does that look like for a two?
I think for me, as a two parent, that I really had to be careful to not work my own agenda with my child. That I had to recognize that she had an agenda, and really honor who she was. And that really came up for me in a strong way, and that, just to put it bluntly, that I really loved her. And I thought, you know, if I really love this person, I'm not going to inflict my will and my agenda onto her. And so I think this, through love and being receptive and open to who she is, and really trying to help her as she is to herself and not how I want her to be, was very important.
I had this saying with my kids when they got a little bit older and could speak for themselves, was when all else fails, ask them what they need, what they want in a situation, because I wasn't always clear where my stuff ended and theirs began. And so I just didn't know. I couldn't tell sometimes. So I would ask them, you know, what do you need? What can I do? And sometimes they would tell me to just leave me alone, and which is a hard thing for me to do.
Right, set some boundaries.
Yeah, they were setting boundaries with me. How dare they? And but then I was able to do it because I just couldn't tell sometimes.
You know, I would add to that as a good thing for two that's a parent is like when all else fails, ask them what they need. When all else doesn't fail, ask them what they need. You know,
well,
really find
I used
out.
It as a last resort.
Right. Well, we have time for one quick question.
Yes, my name's Susan, and I'm also a type 2. And the question I have for the panel, excuse my laryngitis, but I thought this is an important question. As a type 2, I had certain things that were manifested physically for me. Did any one of you, Ron, Eileen, or Deb, have anything physically that manifested itself being such a giver all the time?
Well, I did used to get laryngitis a lot. It seems to be better these days. I don't have as much of it. But I also, a lot of stuff in my stomach, because I was stressed a lot and pulled in different directions by taking on too much, so I felt that in my stomach.
Right, and no attention going to that. So
no,
you have to get really severe first. Right, thank
no.
you.
I used to have bleeding ulcers, and it was because of the intensity and the importance of what I was doing, and I've since no ulcers anymore.
Right.
I've controlled it.
I think that's so important. All this emotion and all this intensity, and there's no place for it to go. Well, we need to stop for today's show, and I just want to briefly summarize that here's the type to giver, that their whole self-esteem, your whole worldview is based upon you must give and give in order to receive. In order to have love, you have to give and give and give. And in the process, before there's the wake-up and before self-observation is in place, that you're very neglectful of yourself. And a lot of internal things can go with all that emotion. Physical symptoms, as we just heard, for one. And the neglect of self. And that the path back to wholeness is to come to that flow of giving and receiving naturally, which we call natural humility. I want to thank all three of you, Ron and Eileen and Deb, for being here. And next week we'll be moving on to the body types. And we'll welcome you all back then to Voice of America and to bringing the Enneagram to life.
Thank you for listening to Empower Your Life with the Enneagram. Join us every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for another informative hour of Empower Your Life with the Enneagram, right here on the network truly dedicated to your health, Voice America Health and Wellness.
What is this wonderful and effective self-help system known as the Enneagram? The Enneagram tells us why we feel, think, and behave the way we do. And most importantly, it tells us how to become our best self in all domains of life. We introduce to you the Trifold School of Enneagram Studies. Our training program has the highest standards in its field, with remarkable records of trained, skilled teachers. The Trifold School of Enneagram Studies includes the Enneagram Professional Training Program, business training, consulting, classes in the integration of psychology and spiritual life. For more information about our products, training, and classes, go online to www.AuthenticEnneagram.com or call 1-866-366-8973. Empower your life today with the Enneagram.